Welcome everyone to our last day. Our guests at our health retreat on our last day say, I don't want to go, but I want to go. I have so enjoyed the week here. I have so much information in my brain that I don't want it to end, but I can't wait to go home and begin implementing it. And when I give stories of our health retreat, now remember, we've been doing this for 24 years and you're just beginning. And that's why I wanted to stress with amusing stories of how Michael started, that you start small. And also stories of how I went in as the very reluctant health director, really just preferring to be very much in the background. But if God has a plan for your life, he gives you the ability to do it. And Michael said he hates health lectures. This is what he told me. He hates health lectures. He said they're so boring because Michael likes things to move along. He's a mover and shaker. And he said, oh dear, most health lecturers, he said, I just don't like it. But he said, then I heard you give a presentation, and he said, what appealed to me was you give the background and you give the whys. And it also annoyed me a little bit myself that if someone says, you should do this, it's good for you. Please don't ever say that. Unless you're willing to say, now let me tell you why it's good for you. And don't so many people say that? And you'll find today that many people say many things. And so many people email me, I'm so confused. I'm told this, I'm told that. Fat's good, fat's bad. Well, then you can show them, well, they're both right, actually. And I try never to go against another health professional. That is actually very unprofessional. So I try very much to work with what the person already has. And I might say, well, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. But we don't quite do it like that this way. Let your speech be always with grace, Colossians 4 verse 6. You know, it's time to build each other up. Isn't it true? So no matter who the other health professional is, whether it's a naturopath or a doctor or a specialist or a nutritionist or a herbalist, but what I have found, I had a man come one day, he opened his suitcase, it was just chock-a-block. Do you have that saying? Full. I'll just say full. It was full to overflowing with supplements. The whole briefcase. He said, can you help me? He said, this person said to go on that, and that person said to go on that, and this person, they're a highly respected health professional, they said I had to have all that. I said, let's have a look. And as I went through it, I said, well, that's the same as that. And you've got three there that have exactly the same thing in it. And you might say, but Barbara, I don't have your knowledge. Well, what we've got today is the internet. And you just Google it. And if you're not sure, just say, leave it with me. And it's quite okay to say, I'm not sure on that one. And do you remember early in the week, one of your students said, what's the name of that enzyme? Do you remember my answer? I don't know. That's perfectly fine. It's perfectly fine to say that. But I'll find out. I'll actually look it up. So please don't hesitate. And remember, 1 Corinthians, it's chapter 1, verse 26. For you see your calling, brethren, how not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called, but God has chosen the foolish things of this world to confound the things that are wise, and God has chosen the weak things of this world to confound the mighty, and base things, and things that are despised. I didn't read the article that the Time magazine wrote about me because it's so bad. Yes, despised. This is what God has chosen. that no flesh should glory in his presence. Mm-hmm. And things that are not, to bring to naught the things that are, that's what God has chosen. And please remember that verse. If ever you think you're unable, you've got too many problems, and a couple of people have mentioned that to me, and I've said, you're alive. And you should be dead going through all that. You have a remarkable story. And when you give your story, people will listen, because you know what they'll think? She knows. He knows. Look what they've been through. There are many armchair naturopaths today. You've heard of armchair naturopaths? They've done a course and they're in their armchair now, but they've got no practical. They've got no practical, and we have the very simple. So you are qualified because God has chosen you. Amen. I am able and I am qualified. I consider myself one of the weak, one of the foolish. But God said, what did he say in 2 Corinthians 12 verse 9? My grace is sufficient for thee. For my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon thee. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, reproaches, necessities, persecutions and distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And look at the disciples. They were just fishermen. And look what they became. So remember who your chief physician is. He's the greatest physician this world has ever known, and he's never lost a case. And so always, always begin there. Recognize your weakness. That's what God wants you to do, and say, Father, use me today. So we'd like to open the floor to any questions. I know, and I'm sure everyone met their divine appointment, which is found in Isaiah 50 verse 4. For the Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned. And if God has given you the tongue of the learned, you'll be able to speak. That I may know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth my ear to hear as the learned. And I was reading in Why We Sleep, he gives a story of a great pianist who was doing a new piece and he just couldn't get that last bit. So he went to bed, got up in the morning, got it. That divine appointment early in the morning. And if you've ever studied chemistry, the periodic table, the guy who put that together just couldn't get that last little bit. He went to bed, got up in the morning, chuck, there it was. Have you found that? That it's that divine appointment where God will shoot those things. So maybe in your divine appointment this morning, some things came to your mind that we can discuss. So are there any questions?
Yes, I have one, because yesterday I got an SMS mm-hmm. from somebody in Denmark, and she wanted to contact me, and I had really difficulties to understand her. Then I checked up the telephone numbers, and I looked on this, and it is somebody I know, and I called her back, and she said, Angela, you know what, we had a talk, it was in May, about a pulver or a herb, I couldn't remember. Then she said, okay, I will send a picture of it. And it was something to help the digestion. And I tried to tell her a bit about it, and she said, yes, but my husband, he's eating in between. And I think also, what could be done for people who are eating in between or eating all the time to get them motivated and helped?
That's a very good question, and we did touch on it, but I know that I'm guilty of information overload. And these five things are very important to remember, and we did talk about it. You might not have caught them, but I'd like to reconfirm this. These are the only things we have say over with digestion. Number one, we have say over what goes in our mouth. Remember the I myself, I choose. We have say over what goes in. We have say over number two, how much goes in. Am I going to eat 10 platefuls? We have say over how much goes in. We say, have say over number three, how long it's in the mouth. How long it is in the mouth. And do you remember the old saying? We should drink our food and chew our drinks. We have say over how often it goes in. Whether it's twice a day, whether it's every hour. And we have say over the environment of entry. At a recent health retreat I did in Manchester, at lunchtime, oh, the laughter coming out of the dinner table when the guests were having dinner. That's what you want to hear, laughter. Environment. So they're the five things that affect the gastrointestinal tract all the way down. So the in reference to your question, Angela, how often? Do you remember the gastrointestinal tract? Starting at the stomach, we're going to draw a nice big one. And here's your pyloric sphincter. And the pyloric sphincter is the sphincter that gets confused when we eat between meals. So the food comes in, breakfast is in there now, and I very much doubt if the pyloric sphincter has opened yet because it's only been an hour and a half. Do you remember how long digestion takes? 3.5 to 4 hours. And then little by little, when the senses, do you remember the senses? Little by little, the senses pick up. Aha. It's starting. We're picking up that the food's broken down. And bit by bit it comes through. Now, after an hour and a half at a stretch, if someone's really thirsty, a little bit of water won't hurt. But really, waiting 2 hours. Now, even though there's still food in the stomach, it's perfectly fine to drink water because the digestive process is happening. Can you see that? And then, 3 hours after the meal, the person gets hungry and they don't realise it's thirst. So they have, it might be a biscuit, it might be a pie, that's common in Australia, cake, or maybe they're really healthy and it's a banana or an apple. What happens then? The newcomer comes in. Do you remember what happens with pyloric sphincter? Quick, shut the gate. Something's just come in. And then it has to wait until that. And because maybe it's an apple or a banana, it's a little bit quicker. Maybe it only has to wait an hour, half an hour. Oh, we can open up again now. And then more food goes through. And then lunch comes. And lunch is 5.5, 6 hours after breakfast. But can you see what interfered with the process? Quick, shut the gate. There's a bit less in there now, but there's still something in there. My husband tells me this. He says, in my office, I've got a 2-hour job to do. But he said, I keep getting phone calls. People keep coming into the office and the job that would take 2 hours ends up taking 8 hours. I think we can all testify to that. Well, that's exactly what happens with digestion. It keeps getting interfered with. So, Angela, the man that you talk about, maybe his wife could show him. You can Google Barbara O'Neill, The Journey Through the Gut, where I show this. And I remember my husband, Michael, when he first saw this, he immediately stopped his eating between the meals. And so by the end of the day, when you've still got a little bit of remnant in breakfast because the whole process kept getting interfered with, is starting to rot because it's in a warm environment. There's your bloating. So a whole lot of things can happen. So remember pyloric sphincter. God put it there. God put it there for a purpose. Any more questions on that one? Okay. Any other questions in any other area?
Yes.
What would you give for advice to a person who is monodepressive? I don't know what it's in English.
If someone's depressed?
Yeah, no, you know, sometimes they're very up and do a lot of things and then they're very...
Yeah, sometimes they're very up and very down. They call it manic depressive. Sometimes it's diagnosed as schizophrenia. So if someone tells me, can you help my son? He's got schizophrenia. My next question is, remember what we're doing? We're ascertaining, number one, the cause.
Bipolar.
Yeah, bipolar is another name they give it. That's probably a more popular name today than schizophrenia. So I investigate. How old is he? 26. Has he ever done recreational drugs? 99% of the time the answer is yes. So can you see what's happened there? There's been some damage. And do you remember the part of the brain where our reason, intellect and judgment lies? The front part of the brain? Do you remember that's where God wants to write his name? So the enemy of souls, where does he want to destroy? Is this front part. Can they recover? It's a long journey, a very long journey. And a friend of mine, her son, went to university in one of the big towns in Australia from one of the South Pacific Islands. He got a scholarship, very bright young man. Within 6 months, he was failing his exams. So the father came over to investigate what was happening and he got into drugs and alcohol. He lost his course. In fact, the teacher said, I have 60 students in my class. I have 3 gifted. He is one of the gifted ones. Lost his course, lost his scholarship. It was such an embarrassment because it was almost a fanfare when he left the island to come over here. So they rang me and said, can he come up to you? I said, sure. And this is when we're in our wild health retreat, way out in the wilderness. He would not come into the house. He basically just slept outside in the shed. And so I would take his meals out to him. But he had a lot of land to roam around. And little by little, we're able to start talking to him. Naturally, he was a very quiet young man. The parents never found out exactly what he took, but there's obvious damage. He stayed with us for about 6 months, and we certainly did see improvement. And then the parents took him home. By now, he's 20. And the father bought a farm, and a lot of physical hard work. They grew pawpaws and bananas and cassava and taro. And this young man just worked very, very hard. And because his mind was no more drugs, he surrendered his life to Christ. He'd been brought up as an Adventist. But when he went to the drugs, he left all that. Today he is 33. He will never marry. He will never be able to do, you know, become an engineer like he wanted to. But, you know, he's managing it. He plays his guitar every night. He reads his Bible. He goes out with the church family witnessing in the parks on Sabbath. He works very, very hard in the farm. So what helped that young man was hard physical work, surrendering his life to Christ and eating very, very well. He will never be what he was, but, you know, he'll be in the kingdom where God will give him a new mind. Sometimes the damage is such that there's not a lot of recovery can happen, but they can be managed. Unfortunately, not everyone has a farm where the young person can go and work hard and give their body the right conditions. But it's also acknowledging, and I think we have done this a few times this week, I have said this to you, that when someone says, how long will this take? The best answer is, it depends how severe the damage is, and it depends how diligent the person is to do what you've got to do to bring a turnaround. But it also depends on total surrender to Christ, because he is able. He is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. So the recovery this young man has had is remarkable. But it's because he did those three things. Yes?
Without drugs.
Without drugs. And yet a lot of young people who have been through this, they are put on drugs to keep them calm, to stop the massive highs and the massive lows. And often when they're on medication, it does take away almost their personality, takes away their creativity, their love, their hate. I saw it when I was working in the psychiatric hospital. They just, you know, the, and that's very, very, very sad. So can you see it's very difficult to treat? It would be so wonderful if we had a hospital like Battle Creek in the mid-1800s where they basically learnt what you're learning here. They had a very, very good medical director in Dr. Kellogg. He was a real mover and shaker. He was passionate about the work and he kept the standard very high. It is said that he was an excellent surgeon, but he rarely did surgery. He tried everything else before he got to that. That would be quite remarkable if that was so. But what we have to remember is there's a roaring lion out there who's going to do all in his power to prevent that happening. But remember what Jesus said in John chapter 16, verse 33. These things have I spoken unto you, that in me you might have peace. In the world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. He said, I have overcome the world. And it's not over yet, is it? And we hope and pray that it will be, that it will be soon. But we also know that the world will be plunged into much deeper darkness than what we've seen in the last couple of years. And this is where I believe the medical missionary work will shine. But it will be more done one-to-one, one-to-one, just a little bit here and a little bit there.
Yes? So that, to understand, you know, this is the three things, you mean going into the country?
Yeah, so hard work, and the best hard work is physical. And, of course, the beauty of the country is there's no temptations. Because unfortunately, this young man, when he first went back to the islands, quite a large island, his old school friends were doing marijuana. And so that's when the parents thought, we're going to buy a farm. We're going to go out further. So hard physical work, the garden is the best work. And well, we'll say the eight remedies, and of course hard work is one of them, but I mention that because that physical work is so good. And a total surrender to Christ. To get a remarkable recovery, you know, they're just about necessary. If you don't have the money to buy a lovely country property and the person is in the city, then, you know, maybe it's gym work, maybe it's, I don't know.
Yes?
What kind of hard work? Because being in the country, maybe...
Gardening.
Gardening.
Yeah.
Being goats.
Yeah, exactly.
Digging holes.
Yeah. And what if the individual is not interested in those activities?
That's very unfortunate. And you know what the Bible says, if a man shall not work, neither shall he eat. So sometimes one must be very gentle but firm and say, well, sweetheart, if you don't do the work, I'm unable to feed you. I don't know.
Also, working in the forest is cutting trees.
Yeah, very good. Yeah, chopping down, chopping wood, all of that hard physical work.
But in the beginning he was doing nothing at your place, or he was just in the room, as you said.
That's right, you have to work with the will. But he was outside and he went for long walks. That was very good. We had a man do our program who was coming off a lot of drugs, a lot of alcohol, cigarettes, and all day he would just walk through the hills. And when he got hot, he'd dive in the creek. And it was the best. Because we've had some coming off a lot of drugs and they just want to sit in their room and play games all day. So you have to work with the will. A man convinced against his will be of the same opinion still. So that you have to have their agreement, of course. God's government is a government of freedom, and the freedom is built on free choice. So we had a young man come. The parents really wanted him to come to our place. You know, they were having trouble with him. He was, I don't know, 18. And Michael and I were coming home from town one evening, and we went past a pub out in the country. Do you know what a pub is? And as we went past, Michael said, that looks like my ute. Now, a ute is a utility truck, small truck with a tray on the back. And he said, oh, that's interesting. And then as we went further, he saw this big piece of cardboard on the side of the road. He said, that was in the back of my ute. And so when we got home, he realised this young man had gone and taken his ute and gone to the pub. So at 5 o'clock the next morning, my husband went into the room and said, wake up, get out of bed, you're going. Out, get in the car. And Michael, so here's the town. There's the road, half an hour there, half an hour there, there's Misty Mountain. Michael drove him to there. By the time he got there, it was about 6 a.m. and Michael just dropped him. And he said, well, what'll I do? Michael said, I don't know. He said, you can walk to town. It might take about 4 hours, or you might get a lift. Goodbye. It's important to be firm. It's important to be very firm. And he said to the young man, no one steals my ute. Because that's what he did. And then the father rang up. Michael, what have you done? Now, you know why the whole situation happened? Because of these parents were very weak and soft with their children. You know, and that is not good. So sometimes you've got that situation where the parents have no control over their children. That's very difficult.
Yes? You mentioned that they will never marry. What is it? What is destroyed?
Some of his brain cells. He'll never be totally right. But he's a pleasant young man. He works very hard. He plays the guitar well. But going into relationships, you know. And it is best that he doesn't.
Yes? I have another question. Another person. He's retarded and he's autistic. He's a grown-up man in the 60s. But he's like a 5 or 6 year old boy.
Yes.
And he's having autism.
Yes, yes. You see, in the book, the number one cause of autism is vaccination. So Bruce Fyfe's book, To Stop Autism Now. And all he does is he works as a journalist. So he just investigated. And he found, you know, not in every single case, but in about 98% of cases, It is the damage from the neurotoxins in the childhood vaccines. An interesting case study has been done with the Amish in America. Where my daughter lives, there's a large Amish community around. And they have almost zero autism and they don't vaccinate their children. But Stop Autism Now shows that even autistic children can recover. And that's when the ketogenic diet, the plant-based ketogenic diet, and having the coconut oil. And in the book I told you about that movie star who her child conquered autism. He won't be 100%, but is about 90% better. So, but what I have told some people this, and they say, "Oh no, we couldn't do that. My child loves bread. He loves his milk. He loves his cheese." Okay. There's nothing you can do if they don't want to do it. So really, in these last few cases I've talked about, who do we have to train? The child? No, the parents. The parents. We have to train the parents. And you're always kind. You're always fair, but you're firm. Yeah?
Could you talk about hypertension and all the steps to work with the blood pressure?
What we find with hypertension is it doesn't go away overnight. And I think we looked at that yesterday. And exercise is the one thing that will strengthen the heart. So it's finding an exercise program that the person with hypertension or high blood pressure can do. We find weight loss is also an important point. So when they go to breakfast like a king, lunch like a queen, and ideally nothing at night, but also getting the carbohydrates down. So again, that's the plant-based, almost a ketogenic type diet. We find a turnaround there. And I gave the story of Henry, the guy who was not interested in stopping his medication. And his doctor took him off all his medication because by implementing these laws and going on that hawthorn berry, he got his blood pressure right down. So again, it won't happen overnight. It won't happen quickly. But if they are diligent in implementing what you advise, you will get a turnaround. We've seen it many times. Yes?
As we're talking about vaccines, and this is a bit of a controversial question perhaps, if we look at the new so-called vaccines, they do not work the same way as the traditional vaccines. Rather, they go in to the cell, not to the cell core, but they go inside the cell and they change the proteins that the cell produce, the mRNA vaccines. If people have taken that vaccine and discovered that they changed their mind and they want to get rid of that change into the cells, is there anything they can do? And if so, what?
It's almost impossible to totally detox from this vaccine. And I'll give you some figures that Michael told me in Australia. And he told me this last week. So it was the 2 weeks previous. So that's 3 weeks ago in those last 2 weeks. There's been 260 deaths in 2 weeks and 259 were all vaccinated. So I think it's becoming very, very clear that the vaccine is not doing what they said it would do. And I listened to a scientist who said, we make vaccines. That's one of the things I do. He said, this one's different. And he said, and it's not doing what we thought it would do. So basically, it's been an experiment. And Benj is right. There are many people who have taken it. And I think, and we're at the table this morning, and Isabella, you know, you mentioned when it first came out, people are going, whoa, have we got a pandemic? Is this a crisis? We've got to do something. And everyone was part of it because we thought it was a crisis, but it actually wasn't. It wasn't. And so what do we do now? What do we do now? What do the people do now that took the vaccine, that didn't want to take it, but they wanted to visit their sick mother, their dying mother? It's been very cruel what's happening. It had on the news about this girl who travelled from one state to another state, and there were lockdowns, and she had to go into 2 weeks quarantine. She wanted to see her dying father. He died while she was in quarantine. It is, and she even appealed if she could get out early. It's very cruel what is happening, and we know that all cruelness comes from the enemy of souls. But what can the person do? So this mRNA, it's a spike protein. Having an mRNA means it reproduces itself. And that's one of the dangers. It just keeps reproducing itself, and it's causing those nanoparticle clotting. And that's why in one country they had a figure that 80% of young men who are vaccinated now have myocarditis. So that's inflammation of the heart muscle. So it appears to affect males in the heart, and it appears to affect women in the reproductive organs. I've read and talked to midwives who said the amount of miscarriages that are happening in women that have the vaccine in pregnancy, they've never seen so many miscarriages. So it appears to affect in the reproductive of women. So what can you do? There are three things that will disarm the enzyme that the mRNA needs to reproduce itself. And one is zinc. There is a component in dandelion. And there is also one of the actives in the white pine needle. Tea. And apparently, looking traditionally, the American Red Indians used to prize the white pine needle tea in any cases of respiratory problems. But they find that each of these has a component in them, and in some places it's slightly different, but it disarms or inactivates the enzyme required for the spike protein to reproduce itself.
Yes? Why do we can't get the zinc when we have no supplements anymore?
The zinc, the highest form of zinc, is found in pumpkin seeds. So it's not hard to start every meal with a handful of pumpkin seeds, is it? And pumpkins grow very, very easily, so we can be growing our own. So pumpkin's quite a high source of zinc, but there's a nice side effect to that. It kills worms in the gut.
Zinc or the pumpkin?
Pumpkin seed. That's an additive. It's not the zinc, it's the... There's another component in the...
Pumpkin seed, yeah. Is it also good to take chlorella and green cheese too?
Yes, you certainly can. The second highest is sesame seed of zinc, and tahini is a very nice... We had the tahini salad dressing? Delicious. Makes it quite creamy. And they're not hard to implement in the daily diet, yeah?
Would you mind explaining... one more time, what you talked about yesterday, the cell and the swelling with the water and the blood pressure, how it affects your blood pressure.
So, remember there's a bilayered membrane around every cell, and there are potassium-sodium pumps in that membrane, and those potassium-sodium pumps are constantly going like this to balance the sodium levels, and the highest concentration of sodium is outside the cell. The highest concentration inside the cell is potassium. There is some sodium inside the cell, but not a lot. But when a person is having a lot of table salt on everything, and we did talk about table salt is made up of sodium chloride, very harsh minerals that can kill the taste buds, and so the person's flooding everything they eat with the table salt, And nearly everything you buy, if you go into a fast food shop, everything's lots and lots of this table salt. So what happening to sodium levels? They're going too high. Okay, students, what's the highest source of potassium? What's a good source of potassium?
Greens.
Your greens, your fresh fruits and vegetables, and remember cayenne pepper. Couldn't find it this morning. What's happening to potassium levels now when a lot of people aren't eating fruits and vegetables? It's going down. So when osmosis and diffusion happens, the highest concentration merges into the lowest, and so too much sodium's going into the cell. And with these huge imbalances of these minerals, the sodium-potassium pumps are unable to work properly. And so now sodium inside the cell starts rising. And when the sodium inside the cell starts rising, that causes the cell to swell. So that's why table salt contributes to high blood pressure. So the person's told to stop the salt. So they stop the salt. Now sodium levels go too low. That can also cause the swell, the cell to swell. And if that cell has no sodium, it will explode. Dr. Lilangri, I don't have his book, but I have an interview of him in another book. He's a French doctor. Sorry, I'm an Aussie, so forgive me that I missed out the French bit. Dr. Lilangri. I might even not have the pronunciation right. He has written a whole book on salt. So I have one of my books at home has an interview of him. And he said, we have no problem with salt in France. He said, because in France, it's right near the where we gather the Celtic salt. He said the salt we use is a mineralized salt. And he calls the inside fluids of the body our internal ocean, because it's the exact same mineral balance and proportion of those minerals as is found in the sea. Yes?
The sodium-potassium pump, is it pumping other minerals also? Or is it
just sodium-potassium. Mm-hmm. But when we've got an absolute overload of sodium and a deficiency of potassium, that's where the problem arises.
Yeah.
Why exactly does an overload of sodium cause the cell to swell? Is it because the cell takes in too much other molecules that force the cell to grow? Or?
You know, I can't tell you the fine details of that. Maybe Dr. Lilangri does a little bit finer in his book.
What's the name of his book?
I don't know, but it will be something about salt. But I have a book that has an interview, and the interview goes for about 10 pages, so there's a lot of information in there. Yeah?
It's basically, as I see it, what happens with potato when you're taking salt to the liquid, because then osmosis appears, because you'll have more water, you'll have more salt in the water, and then there's not a lot of salt in the potatoes, but because of the high salt content in the water, then you can have more water coming into the potato, making them more moist, adding more flavor. And when you're making mashed potatoes, you want as little liquid in the potato as you can have. So this is why you don't add salt to the water, because then you can add your plant milks and your butter or your olive oil. So this makes a difference, and I think that would be the reason why.
That certainly could have a lot to do with it. Yes?
Continuing with controversial questions, EMF radiation, we talked a bit about that earlier, and there are some studies available that suggest that what happens when you have EMF radiation is that since it's electricity involved, electrical fields, it opens the gates for calcium to come in excessive amounts into the cell. Now, that's a hypothesis, but it's supported by some studies. But if that is the case, if the hypothesis is right, what would it mean to have excessive amounts of calcium in the cell?
That I do not know. But I do know there are different forms of calcium, and I do know the calcium phosphate pulled out of the bones in a crystal form certainly contributes to the hardening of the arteries, contributes to the deposit as bone spurs, kidney stones, things like that.
There was a question up there.
I only wanted to say that the book that you mentioned is Sea Salt Hidden Powers from Jacques de Langlais.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But I have another question.
Yeah.
We know that there is a time when we can't go to the doctor anymore.
Yeah.
What do we do when we have an accident here on a farm, or so when I have a deep cut and the problem is the tetanus?
I'm glad you brought that up. We've dealt with quite a few treading on rusty nails and treated it naturally. So it's important to know with tetanus that it would be a deep cut that has healed on the outside but not the inside. And there's an element of horse organism because horses carry tetanus. But in every case like this, we have found that the hot and colds and the grated potato keeps that wound open until it heals from the inside out. And do you remember the Aussie saying I've been teaching you? Nip it in the bud. You move straight away onto it. And I told you about the man who put a sickle in the back of his foot, and it was 3 days later and his foot's up like a red balloon and there's a red line going up his leg. Now, that's pretty dangerous. And we did the hot and colds and the grated potato, and that line came down little by little by little. So, you know, we've even been able to help people when we haven't nipped it in the bud. That wasn't nipped in the bud. That was allowed to develop. And, of course, the problem was he was lying in his caravan smoking marijuana waiting for nature to heal. Nature will heal. Remember the if. If you give it the right conditions. And even with deep cuts, remember yesterday I said the guy had the deep cut and there was a doctor nearby that could stitch it. But if you're in the bush or you can't go to the doctor anymore, there was a time in Australia, I think it was in 2021 early, you couldn't go to the hospital unless you were vaccinated, that you wouldn't even be allowed in. So what do? You must clean it. Always clean it. That's common sense. And you clean it out. Hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is a great thing to have in the cupboard. And you pour that in and it fizzes it all up and cleans it out. And then sprinkle the cayenne pepper in it. Remember the green juice? And then bind it. Bind it up. You've just got to keep it together.
Yes?
With the hot and cold, can we also put in charcoal?
I don't think there's a need, and I don't think it will do a lot. The charcoal has to be applied for a while. Okay. Now, remember the wound that we helped to dress on Elizabeth yesterday? I said to her this morning, how does your leg feel? She said, my leg feels lovely. And the reason I mention that is the body will tell you if that dressing needs a change. It'll start to hurt, it'll start to feel uncomfortable, then move. So when Elizabeth tells me it feels lovely, you know what I think? Let's just leave it. Let's just leave it. Because your body will tell you. It's like the man whose little boy broke his leg. And so they put his leg in a plaster. It was right up, halfway up his foot because it was the lower part of the leg. And after about 3 weeks, the little boy started to cry a lot. And the father said to the mother, I want you to take him back to the doctor. This should not be. And she went back and the doctor said, no, it can't come off for 6 weeks. So the father came home and said, what did the doctor say? He said, it's got to stay there. He said, make another appointment, I'm coming. So So they went in and the father said, look, there is something wrong. We know our son and he's crying. Something's wrong. And the doctor said, look, we have to leave it on for 6 weeks. So the father, he brought a bag in, he got tin snips out and he opened the whole cask in front of the doctor. And when he opened it, the most terrible smell came out. The cask had been rubbing against the little boy's foot and it had made a wound. And in that hot, moist environment, it had basically started to break down. Ooh, that's why you have to listen. That's why every good health professional, and as you as medical missionaries, you listen to the parents. They know their children. Mm-hmm. And they know when there's something wrong. See how the body does speak to you. You've got to listen. Mm-hmm. Yes?
When you have an open wound, how do you apply with hot and cold when it's bleeding and open?
Yes. So we had a very interesting case with Elizabeth yesterday. It was an open wound about this much. And it was basically raw flesh. We did not do hot and colds. We cleaned it. Mm-hmm. And we cleaned it with a soft cloth. And then and you would know as a nurse, you can get some great dressings that are infused with like a fat. I think it's, Vaseline, something like that. So we got a calendula cream that Isabella had bought. So it's quite fatty and we just had a square cloth and we just covered it in that base so you can make your own and we put it on the area. Now it did still weep a little bit and Elizabeth kept mopping that up and I had a good look at it and I thought maybe, and Elizabeth too, maybe we cut the bit of skin that was loose, but when I tried to it didn't move, so you leave it. You leave it, it's connected again. So we put a fresh one on and bandaged it softly on for the night, and that's where Elizabeth said it feels very, very nice. And she said when that cloth went on, it felt very nice. See how you're listening to your body's reaction? If it didn't stop bleeding, I said we might have to put some cayenne pepper on it, and Elizabeth didn't like the sound of that. But it wasn't bleeding enough to really warrant that. And people say, wouldn't that hurt? Well, it does, but not for long. You know, there's the initial tingle, but then that settles down. So again, remember what you're watching for? Response. That's what you're watching for. Should be an O.
But still in other cases you would do the hot and cold.
Yes, you would.
How would you do that with the open?
Well, you don't often do it with an open wound.
Okay.
It's more for deeper.
But with this man who had the blood going up his leg. Yeah. Was that not open or?
Well, the problem was it had closed. That was the whole problem. It was a deep wound and it had closed on the outside. And so we needed to open that. And we didn't open it with needles or knives. We let the body open it by doing hot and colds and the grated potato, and that just opened it and that helped to pull it out. And I said to him, that must not close. Now, the day will come when you can do hot and colds every 2 hours and grate a potato all day and all night, and it won't open. It'll only open if it needs to. Remember Irene last week, in her wound on her knee, that 13 operations, and I said, do you get any ooze coming out of that? Weep? Do you call it a weep? Little drops coming out. She said, I do. I said, do you know when there's nothing to come out, nothing more come out? You have to trust this body and work with what it does. And remember Julia falling off, my Julia, falling off and spraining her leg badly. And I went to put the ice on. Oh, no, 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 that's not working. you watch the response. And so we did equal hot and cold. Yeah?
I have a case with my husband because he has cut in his finger very, really, really deep. And we have a discussion with the doctors because it must be a stitch and surgery done on it, and they have said we really must to have a tetanus shot. But what should we do at home when you can't go because it's bleeding a lot?
That's when you put the cayenne pepper on it, and the tetanus shots can be actually quite toxic. So if you deal with it straight away, but even Chris, you know, the guy with the balloon foot. Where he was sickling, there was a horse in the paddock. So that was a perfect environment for tetanus. And he's smoking marijuana and drinking coffee, and yet still the natural remedy's got a response there. So, and remember, you've got a great physician. And the verse in James chapter 5:15, and the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up. And Ellen White says it's not enough to pray. She said, oh, of course we must pray, but God will put into our minds what needs to be done. And if you don't feel inspiration, I don't seem to have any messages from God, well, just do what you think would work and just watch the response. Just watch the body's response. See, Michael and I never go to the doctor. And when his son was at 14 and he was doing some woodwork and the power saw went up the middle of his hand there, went right up there, went in about nearly an inch. So Michael, who does not like doctors, well, it's not that he doesn't like doctors, some of our good friends are doctors, but he doesn't like going to the medical facility. So he looked at it, he washed it, because that's common sense, isn't it? Wash it out. And he said he had a good look in there and nothing major was cut. So he just shoved everything back into place and put some calendula or comfrey cream on and bound it up. And he tells the story of when he was about, I think he was about 30, and he's living way out in the country, and his little boy used to love standing next to him when he drove his car with his arm around Dad's shoulder. And Michael said he went round a corner one day, maybe a little fast, and the door flew open and Mark flew out and his face went on the gravel. And when Michael got to him, part of his lip was hanging down. So Michael quickly picked him up, put him in the car. Michael was working in a building this day and they had a bath in it. So he put Mark in the bath to calm him down. And he said he just pushed all the gravel out and washed it and then shoved it all back into place. And he had some cream in the car and just put the cream on it. And Mark, you know, he'd been crying a bit. And Mark fell asleep, so Michael just laid him down and worked all day. Because Michael's first wife was a nurse and he knew that if his wife saw it, she'd want to rush him straight to hospital. But he felt that he could do that and he did. And that lip healed very nicely. I just tell you these stories to show you that sometimes a really bad situation, it can be helped. But Michael had an experience in a hospital once too where his little boy had diarrhea and they were out in the country picking grapes. The little boy was about 3 and his wife said, just take him into hospital because it's so hot out here in the caravan and they've got big fans in the hospital. So Michael agreed just to make it a little bit easier for him and they'd been giving him charcoal because he had diarrhea. And the little boy did a poo. And when the nurse saw the colour, they immediately thought he must be bleeding because the stool was black. And so they quickly said, we've got to take him to a bigger hospital. And Michael tried to explain, but they basically said, what would you know? And then halfway to this hospital, Michael insisted on staying with his son. Little boy needed to go to the toilet, so they stopped. It was way out in the country, so he just went on the side of the road and there was a little bit of blood. And that's not uncommon if someone has diarrhea. It's just that little capillaries sometimes can break. Whoa, they really reacted to that. So when they got him into hospital, they said he has to have surgery. This little 3-year-old boy. And Michael said, no, and they said, you cross us too much, we will make your child a ward of the state. Mm-hmm. So Michael said, well, I'm staying with my son and I want another opinion. And every day they would come in and take Mark's blood and he would cry and cry. And after 2 days of this, Michael said to Mark, he said, it's all right, Mark, they're not going to do it anymore. And they said, excuse me, Mr. O'Neill, we've got to do this every day. And Michael said, I have told my son, you are not doing it anymore and you will not. This is it. And so Michael could not get out. They insisted that he stay there. And praise God, they got another opinion. And this doctor said, this child doesn't need surgery. So what Michael did, because he couldn't leave with the boy, so he barricaded himself in the hospital room and he wouldn't let anyone in. And Michael said he was getting so hungry because he hadn't eaten for days. And they wouldn't let Mark drink, but he kept sipping water to him. And a nurse came in and it was in the middle of the night. Michael felt he couldn't sleep or they would take the boy away. And so this nurse came in and said, oh, she said, we feel so sorry for you. She said, we feel so sorry for what you are going through. Can I do something? He said, can you get me some food? So she went in, because it's night duty, not many people around. So she made him three fried eggs and some white toast. Oh, he didn't mind, he just ate it. But not many people are able to do what Michael did. But eventually they let him go and they made him sign a paper, you know, that totally responsible. But after that experience, can you see why Michael was not keen to go into into a hospital? But Mark's 35 today and there's a little bit of a scar on his hand and there's a little fine scar on his lip. So I just tell you these stories to show you that often we can handle it ourselves. But I did tell you the story, I think, of Jeff, our maintenance man for a few years ago, was loosening the chainsaw, got stuck, and he was trying to get it out, and the tree was shaking a bit, and there was a branch that was loose, and he didn't realise, and it fell on his hand. They brought him to us, and we immediately put Comfrey on it. But I could tell by looking at this man, it was not easing his pain. You know what that told me? There's something more. So if you don't get a response, you may need to go and get more help. Went to hospital, the bones were like that. So they basically had to, of course, get them like that. So when you don't get a response, it can mean that there's something more there. Yes?
You were going to talk about what to have in first aid kits.
That's true. And I think you could probably just about tell me after what you've heard, is that right? So if someone's bleeding a lot, what? I think you know what to put in. So what's the number one ingredient in our first aid kit? Cayenne pepper. It's almost your first aid kit in one. Cayenne pepper. If someone's having a heart attack, give them cayenne pepper. If someone's having a panic attack, give them cayenne pepper. If someone's cut themselves, sprinkle the cayenne pepper on. It's very universal, yes? Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You just give it to drink or under the
tongue? Just give it to them and then give them something to drink.
About how much?
Oh, about half a teaspoon. Usually shocks them out of it. You're always tender and you're always merciful and kind. So I'll tell you the story. We had a lady that had a heart attack in our cooking class. They called me, I came running down. She's about 80. Her husband told us she'd had a few already that year. Guy was holding a pulse and he said, the pulse is weak. There's about 14 people standing around. It was in our health retreat in Melbourne. I said to my offsider, quick, cayenne pepper. put it was we you know, it's split second stuff, so yeah, and we put it in the mouth. It was about a half a teaspoon. She was half conscious. All the blood had gone out of face. Her face was white. We gave her a bit of water and she sipped. And it was 2 minutes, and the guy holding the pulse said, "The pulse is strong." Do you know it takes 1 minute for one drop of blood to go around your whole body? 1 minute. And that's why when people say, "Can I do anything about the vaccine? Could I put something on it?" I said, "Do you know that by the time you put the poultice on, it's around your whole body? It takes 1 minute for one drop of blood to go around your whole body." So can you see that putting K in, and it immediately was taken up into the blood in the mouth? What it did was open the blood capillaries, got a better delivery of blood through, and the lady sat up and everyone was going, "Wow." So there must have been about 18 people who all witnessed that day. And they were looking at me, and I said, no, it's not me, it's the cane pepper.
I didn't get the first bit. What did the person have?
She was having a heart attack. So all the blood came to her face. She woke up. The pulse was strong. We sold out of cane pepper that program. Everyone wanted to take cane pepper home with them. But then one of the staff came running to me and said, "This girl's having a panic attack in her room because of the heart attack." So I said, "Get the cane pepper." So we go, and she was just going, "Ha, ha, ha," like at this in the room. She's about 35. I said, "Quick, Candace, cane pepper, put it in her mouth," and drank it. And I took her by the hand and I said, "Let's go for a walk." And I took her outside, and she's, you know, and I just said to her, "Look at the trees. The birds, what a wonderful day." And she just calmed right down.
You mean it was the same person?
No. No, she started to panic because of the heart attack and run to her room and was having a panic attack.
How often are you with, in what time up distance would you give the cayenne again, either by heart attack or panic attack?
Well, if the panic attack person slows right down, there's probably no need to give it again. And just the very threat of having it again, if they have a panic again, I won't panic. And also with the lady with the heart attack, they were just so excited and impressed that they started to implement that 3 times a day. The lady that had the heart attack, the guest said to her, "Was it hot in your mouth?" She said, "Oh, I don't know. I guess," because she was half conscious. That's why we could get her to drink and do it. So that was our experience with heart attacks and panic attacks. Yes?
I like what you talked about listening, like your son was sick and there was another case of listening. So I just want to give an example, like when I was heart operated or chest open, I am super allergic to metal. And they put the chest together with metal. Mm-hmm. And it was itching and itching and itching forever. Until one person listened to me and suggested after 3 months they will remove the wires.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Which they finally did.
That's right. Do you know that there are some excellent doctors, there are some excellent nurses. They're the ones that will listen. I remember when my father was in ICU. You know what happened with my father? He's 80. He doesn't drink a lot of water. He's in the car for a long time. And he got to the venue and they gave him a cup of coffee. What's that going to do? And he had a little bit of a turn. So they rushed him to hospital. And it just one thing went to another. And by the time I got to the hospital, he was in a drug-induced coma. Because in his day's state, they'd catheterise him, and he tried to pull the catheter out, and so they put him in a drug-induced coma. And we had a round table with the doctors and the specialists, and one said, "We think he's got Legionnaire's disease." And another one said, "I think he's got pneumonia." And I'm sitting there thinking, well, as far as the east is from the west are all these so-called diseases they think that my dad has. And of course, I can't say, well, I just think he was dehydrated, and I think there was a bit of overreaction. Whoa, I'm the foolish and the despised and the, remember, just, and my sisters, I've got a sister who's a doctor of archaeology and my other sisters, two other sisters are scientists. They'd be looking at me as if, excuse me, what, you know. Anyway, so I just, you know, the Ecclesiastes chapter 3 said there's a time to speak and there's a time to keep silent, and I knew that's when I should keep silent. Anyway, an elderly doctor came in. She must have been 80. She came in one day and she looked at Dad, she looked at his tongue, and she took him off most of his medication. Oh, I was so thankful for that lady. His tongue was white. You see, they'd put him on this drug, which had this side effect. Then they put him on this drug for this side, and and she saw straight away. And it wasn't long after that they were able to bring him around, and then I started to work on getting him up to my Misty Mountain. And so this was probably 14 years ago. Dad died 2 years ago at the age of 92. So I had lunch with my sisters because I knew they were the problem. So I smiled very sweetly and I said, I'd like to take Dad home. Now, I knew that they might agree because they're so busy and they wanted to put him in rehab. My father's an inventor. He's a pilot. He's an engineer. And I knew that in rehab he'd be medicated. And they said, you'll take him off his medication. I said, I won't touch his medication. Because he was on some very strong antibiotics because one doctor reckoned he had some sort of parasite. Anyway, I said, no, I won't. I won't take him off his medication. They were talking about taking his license away from all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And because they were so busy and they didn't have time, they agreed to let me take him home. Praise be to God. So we took Dad home. And Dad was very diligent. He got a little alarm clock as to when to drink his water. He walked every day. I think I get my diligence from my father. He was diligent. Every day he walked a little bit further and he walked a little bit further till eventually he walked the hour walk all the way over to the health centre and back again. And then Michael said to him one day, Ted, would you like to take the car and drive to town? Now, this is a two-hour drive into town. He said, thanks, Mike, I will. Remember what my sisters were talking about, taking his license away? Anyway, after about a week and a half, he came to me and he said, well, Bob, I'm done with it. I said, done with what, Dad? And he had a bag of his medication. He just threw it in the bin. I said, good on you, Dad. That's what it had to be because I know I'd have to be answerable to my sisters. And Dad went home after two. He said, I'm ready to go home now. He went home functioning and working well with his little alarm clock that told him when to drink water. My sisters rang up and they picked him up from the station. He looked very good. And the first thing they said to him was, did Barbara take you off your medication? And he said, she didn't mention my medication, but I'm off it because I chose. So they had to back off. Thank you.